Welcome to the Sports Marketing Scotland podcast. I'm Chris Sampson. On today's episode, I'm joined by Andy Meikle and JC Oliver. They're the co-founders of Recast. Andy is CEO, while JC is CMO, and Recast is a tech startup in the sports video space. It's aiming to revolutionise the sports rights landscape for clubs, rights owners, brands and fans. The likes of Hibs, Man City and QPR are already using the platform, so of course I wanted to find out all about their idea and their plans going forward. Enjoy the podcast. Andy, JC, welcome to the podcast. Can you just give us a brief introduction to you both to start us off, and a bit about you so far in terms of your careers? Andy, why don't we start with you?
Cool, thanks very much. So going back about 12 years when I first moved into the tech and media space, but it was in 2012 when I took that experience and that sort of line of work back into a passion of mine, which was sport. I set up a business called Sport Lobster in 2012, which was a sports social media platform, and grew that through some key partners such as the NBA and Cristiano Ronaldo, and that was the World Cup year, so the business accelerated thereafter. But as I exited that business in 2018 and I moved to Dubai, facilitated that, I then moved back to the UK to set up Recast, which was born out of my experiences from my Sport Lobster days. So yeah, set up Recast in, it was 2018, and here we are.
Superb. Well, yeah, we'll get on to much more about Recast in the next couple of questions as well. But JC, what about yourself?
Yeah, so JC Oliver, CMO co-founder, met Andy about 3 years ago when he was in Dubai. And following Sport Lobster's demise, he had another idea. And if you think Andy knows everyone in sport, I know everyone in marketing and media. And he pitched this idea to me, and I thought it's a fantastic concept. And so my background is as I say, brand marketing and media. I've been at a number of different media institutions, from the BBC to IT publishers such as IDG, and then spent a huge amount of my career upbringing at Microsoft, where I ran their content and strategy teams and then went on to run their global innovation. Left there, set up a company, sold it, and one of that particular company was in the loyalty space, which, as we'll get onto with Recast, is focusing a lot around how we allow people to use their own data, monetize their own attention, and get rewarded for their own behavior. And then went on to be global chief creative officer for AOL Verizon. And as I say, met Andy 3 years ago. We hit it off, and here we are today. So that's me.
Brilliant. And we've mentioned it a couple of times already, but who wants to take us through that Recast story then? How did it all begin? Where did the idea come from? And where have we got to now?
Yeah, so it was when I moved to Dubai with Sport Lobster, and we're looking at with the investors that took over what was the sort of next phase of that business, to look to revamp the business, quite frankly. And I think at the time that there was a lot of hype around blockchain, cryptocurrencies, etc. And I just had also throughout my time running Sport Lobster, with that idea being born out of frustration as a fan. It was on that journey that I got insight from a business perspective what the frustrations are and the challenges of monetizing viewership across social media platforms and the changing consumption and payment patterns that were accelerating, and all those things combined, I think, brought together this idea of more of a sharing model in which fans, brands, and rights holders can live together seamlessly and cohesively in a fair environment. And the idea developed over time. I mean, it wasn't just one idea in one moment and that was it. I spent more time doing more research and moved away from the blockchain and crypto component, which initially started out as, but then moving into this idea of credits, in-app rewards, and then raising some initial funding to build an MVP and drive on from there.
Brilliant. And where do you come into that story, JC?
Right at the end. As I say, Andy had kind of, he was still in Dubai at the time, and the previous idea to Recast was called 10, which when I came on board, I said, we've got to get rid of that because no one really knows what that means. I mean, it was all right. But yeah, I came in at that point and, you know, Andy was looking at partners to join him on this quest. And as I say, the media and marketing angle is what I brought. So yeah, that was it was a great partnership. And then we've also got a third co-founder who actually was in the same building as you. At FanDuel, I believe they're in the same building as Skyscanner.
Yeah, they were.
And he was the CTO, so we kind of had the marketing angle. Andy is coming up with the idea and the sports background, and then Chris as the tech side, and then the other person that's kind of part of that triumvirate, if we're talking as a four, is Simon Clegg, our chairman, who has a very rich history in sport, ran the British Olympics Association for, I don't know, 20 years, I think. And then was chairman of Ipswich Football Club. So he comes with an amazing pedigree. So the four of us kind of roll as one unit.
Yeah, yeah. And it actually started with presenting this business model to those who had taken over Sport Lobster and moving as JC into this sort of this new brand. But they just didn't really buy into the model, quite frankly. They were like, no, I think we should stick to ads. And I was like, oh, right, okay. But I was very passionate about the direction that this could head in. So like I said, this, I think it was 2018, sat with Simon, then JC, it all happened very quickly. And I said, this is the direction I want to go. And fortunately, I want to wind them all up here, but I've got three grey-haired men joining me on this journey. Oh, love it. I had to get that in there.
The three wizards.
The three wizards.
Yeah.
The three wise men.
Yeah. Three wise men, exactly.
My beard's grey. The top's not, but the beard's grey. That's my grey.
Here we go. Anyway.
Andy, you mentioned that direction there, and that's one of the things that is impressive to me anyway, that the growth of the company in just a short space of time. What can that be attributed down to, and how has that kind of manifested itself almost?
Yeah, I think it was received very well as a concept, talking with athletes, the representatives, rights holders, brands, those representing brands, etc. But at the end of the day, it's really important to put something that's very new in people's hands and for them to get a feel for it. And so it was in the end of 2019, raised some initial capital, some pre-seed, £250,000, and formed a deal with another Scotland-based business to deliver an MVP as quickly as possible, basically, and showcase that to other potential investors and potential partners to try and drive everything forward. And it wasn't too long. It was November when we closed that round, and it was only in February when I said, okay, I think we've got enough here and let's start having some more conversations, and interest was starting to increase. And fortunately, just before lockdown happened, we closed £1.3 million that allowed us to drive on in developing the platform, bring the development in-house, and of course, then moved into closed beta in June 2020. And that's where, with the support of some initial, as we call them, pioneer partners, allowed us to really look at a number of things, you know, on JC's front, how our brand is, how we're positioning, you know, our business in that respect, but from a technical perspective and the product perspective, how did we want to make this as seamless for our partners, whether it was one individual that's running a content and media team up to a tier one organization or broadcaster that have got many people involved. We want the platform to be as seamless for them to use, just as we want it to be as seamless for a 15-year-old fan through to a 65-year-old fan who's interested in table tennis or they're interested in rugby, whatever it may be. And so, you know, considering the platform aggregates multiple sports, aggregating multiple audiences. We spent a good amount of time in closed beta testing, learning, refining across the whole business. And then led us to moving out of closed beta more recently, having closed our Series A.
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely super impressive. And from my perspective, obviously, you guys are aware from that tech background that I kind of see it in both senses. It's across in both spaces. And that's what impresses me so much as well. And we'll get on to some of the main benefits. But one of the first things that I actually spotted about recast the company and the platform was that you're based in Edinburgh, weirdly enough. And can you talk me through, is there any particular reason why that is? I think from a Skyscanner perspective, just speaking from past experiences now, Edinburgh was always kind of seen as our HQ, and the reason for that was that closeness to a lot of the tech side of things from the unis and the engineers coming through there. Is that one of the reasons why?
It's just because my wife wanted to live in Edinburgh. I am kidding. We were in London when I was running Sport Lobster, and it was a fantastic place to be to grow that business. Moved to Dubai, as I mentioned, and then to drive Recast forward, I feel that there's a really strong infrastructure and access to talent. I mean, there's so many reasons to move back to the UK, and many of those over recent years showing themselves, particularly in Edinburgh, access to talent across, you know, across Scotland, from Edinburgh, Dundee, Glasgow, etc. And particularly, you know, the teams that the likes of Skyscanner and FanDuel had built out. So when we wanted to make the move back, just felt right to go up to Edinburgh for all those reasons, and quite frankly, personal reasons. I'm originally from there, my wife's from there, so there was an element of that. There is a bit of truth in that. But no, it was because of how much I've seen the tech scene grow in Edinburgh in particular over the past few years, and I thought that that's a good place to go and drive forward with the business, basically.
Yeah, from my perspective, it makes perfect sense, to be honest, from that. But it's really refreshing from my perspective too, because, yeah, I think a lot of the kind of businesses in the sports marketing space just see England and just see London. So I think it's great that you're based in Edinburgh.
Yeah, and I think there's different, there's different strengths in different areas for different aspects of the business. So, there's a number of our key individuals and personnel that are based down in London. Edinburgh is HQ. But I think that often people will gravitate to what kind of seems like the best place because it gets the hype and exposure. I mean, even with Sport Lobster, my co-founder Aaron and I, we didn't go to, as they call it, Silicon Roundabout in London. We went over to London Bridge first and then moved over to Hammersmith because I don't feel like you need to be in amongst the noise and the busyness to, it allows you to focus on your own business, keep an eye on other things that are going on and go and join those communities as and when you like. But I think if you can take a step away from that busyness and focus on your own environment with, like I say, and the access to talent and the infrastructure that Edinburgh has shown over the past few years, it just was it was a pretty straightforward decision.
Brilliant. Let's move on slightly then and get into some of the specifics about Recast. But one of the first things I wanted to cover off in that space is actually a bit of a definition of an OTT platform, because there's been so much chat in recent years about clubs and leagues creating their own platforms versus the separate ones like yourselves potentially beginning. Is there a definition out there?
Yeah, I don't think there's one definition. And to be honest with you, I'm not quite sure how OTT ever survived, the first blush of this being to be honest with you, it's not necessarily a consumer acronym. I mean, it stands for over the top, which doesn't really make any sense to anyone either. But Essentially, it's if we think about traditional media sitting between an audience and an idea or a company, you normally have to go through those traditional companies in order to reach those audiences, or as some people like to say, consumers. I actually hate that word. And over the top just means you bypass, you go over the top of traditional media to reach those people directly. It's a bit like a brand that would be in John Lewis. Instead of it sitting in John Lewis and you buy it from John Lewis, you buy directly from Breville. The reason why it's been such a crazy concept is because a lot of producers or companies never really wanted to deal with audiences and have to build that muscle and that capability. And so when we term an OTT service, it simply means that clubs, if we take football clubs, for instance, because that's probably where it's most germane at the moment, Manchester United, MUTV, QPR, who we've just signed, have got QPR Plus. It just means that they create a service that goes directly to their fans, that the fans tend to spend a subscription or some type of pay-per-view to access that content. and it's specifically and only a content that is regarding that club. And so, yeah, that's if there's a definition, it just means direct to consumer is another way of looking at it.
It's a much easier definition than
I know. Isn't it? Exactly. That's what I've never understood how OTT had kind of gained traction, because it's such a horrible term that actually once you know what the acronym means, still doesn't really help you define it. Whereas direct to consumer, and as I said, I'm never a fan of the word consumer, because it just feels like there's a consumption point. They're real people that have got brains. So, you know, DTA, direct to audience, is a new one we've just come up with today. So, yeah, it just makes more sense if people understand it like that. And there are huge amounts of advantages by doing it, but also a huge amount of disadvantage in terms of setting up that business, managing that business. And a lot of clubs and a lot of sporting institutions that set them up tend to set them up primarily as a PR play or simply as a marketing play, i.e., you know, someone from Manchester United says to someone from Manchester City, oh, we've got our own channel. And so the other club then has to create their own channel. And it's very rare when we look around the industry that we see those type of OTT services that are working well, one for the audiences and one for the fans, but also for the clubs themselves. So it's very hard. It's a very, very hard thing to get right, and is where the kind of genesis and gestation of Recast came from, which was trying to solve one of those issues. And we feel like we're on the road to doing that.
Or even during pandemics, when streaming is thrust upon clubs that haven't done any streaming before. Yeah, that seemed to be a situation that happened for a lot of clubs like in the past year and a half.
Well, absolutely. And you know, look, even when Sky tried it earlier this year, I think the price point was slightly off. They were charging £15 for the matches that weren't part of their deals. And a lot of the clubs are asking, hey, listen, let's do this ourselves. So, yeah, there's a lot of tension in the industry as to getting the right content out to the right fans at the right time on the right platform. And OTT is one of those ways of doing it. But it's definitely fraught with some tension and danger, because quite frankly, you need to get the capital, you need to manage that business. And football clubs, again, we'll just use football as an example, are very good at producing football clubs. They're not necessarily good at producing TV channels. So getting the capability and skill set right is very difficult.
It feels like a good time to move on to some of the benefits then of partners, shall we say, from signing up to Recast. Can you talk us through a few of those?
Yeah, I think extending on some of the stuff that JC has said there, if we actually take a step back to what we initially built this for, you know, looking at the first sort of 24 months or so, was to provide tier two, tier three rights holders with a ready-made platform, end-to-end solution in which they can more effectively monetize, you know, viewership on their content. And it just so happens, as you're saying, that at the time that we've launched, there's been a pandemic, the changing consumption and payment patterns that we, you know, everybody has seen has accelerated. And as a result, that's meant that we've very quickly moved more into sports like football and into conversations with tier one rights holders, and some of them already taking up the platform. But if we take a step back, you know, those rights holders, they perhaps are struggling to monetize or sell their rights. They're not monetizing viewership on social media platforms, and they can't afford or don't have the know-how to develop their own OTT platform. And so that's where we come along with a ready-made solution. That's one of the benefits. But on top of that, it's our model that's quite unique, facilitating microtransactions. You know, we just need to look at other businesses and perhaps, you know, some of them being games with elements of gamification, but the likes of Fortnite generating significant revenue through microtransactions. And I think because we've seen people cutting the cord and unsubscribing from traditional linear channels, it means that the past few years, the industry has kind of sort of jumped to assuming and it being a misconception that fans just don't want to pay for anything. And that's not true. They're looking for affordable access to content, and more so paying for what they want, when they want, and there being sort of convenience there. And that's where our platform facilitating microtransactions, coupled with a subtle element of gamification and rewarding the users,
and brings a benefit to brands, fans, and rights holders within the same ecosystem.
I think it definitely jumps out as something that's pretty unique at the moment, actually. And it's one that, for me anyway, looks like something that clubs should be getting involved in. If a club does partner with Recast, what can they expect from that? What's next for them in terms of like an onboarding process? Is there anything that they specifically need to do, or is it all on Recast's side? Is it an easy setup for a club?
Yeah, so we're building much more towards a self-serving platform, but we're already, you know, very much there in the sense that literally, if this was a conversation with a club today and right now they said, oh yeah, we'd like to set up our channel, this is not an exaggeration. It takes them 1 minute to register, like registering on a social platform. Knowing who they are, we verify that account, and therefore they have publishing function that's made available to them. They can schedule live streams, they can schedule on-demand content, they can geo-restrict, they can set their own price point, they can tag others and share earnings. So, you know, something pretty unique is the ability to perhaps tag a publishing company that's a production company that's helping them on the production side of things, or tagging a player by incentivizing them to stay after training to create the content with them and sharing the earnings on each piece of content. They can also, there's within our model, there's an incentivized sharing mechanism. So, you know, they can set the percentage there so that if any fans who view the content then share on, then they are rewarded with credits for views that they refer. You know, there's some neat little things that are worked into the platform. But the good thing is these clubs, if we're talking about clubs, are already creating the content. They're already mostly distributing on social or on their own OTT platforms. But many of them will have hit a ceiling. I mean, there's only so many ex-club fans. Like, you know, I'm a Hibs fan. So there's only so many Hibs fans that are going to necessarily go beyond that paywall and pay, you know, let's say £180 a year for that. So how do they continue to engage with, you know, other fans who are perhaps slightly more passive or casual? How do they move them through that funnel, and how do they monetize them whilst doing that? And that's where we sit quite nicely between social and the other end of the spectrum with subscription-based OTT.
At the moment, with the clubs that you've got signed up, is there a recommendation from you, or are they doing this in terms of creating content specifically on Recast, or is it a case of kind of resharing stuff that's already been produced elsewhere?
I mean, exclusivity is going to drive most value. We don't buy any rights. We don't offer minimum guarantees, so we can only give guidance. And the good thing is that we're building those case studies now already. So we can see that when you posted X video, you made this much. But when you put that video on, and particularly we're seeing with live and near live, then maximum value can be generated. So with every single partner on our platform, ranging from the European Tour through to Man City to Hibs, etc., it is a case of horses for courses, because they've all got their own digital strategy. They've all sold their rights, either, you know, some of them will have sold them directly, like the European Tour, or through their league or competition, like Man City and Hibs would have done. So there's all sorts of complexities, let's say, to be considered when you move really into the sort of tier one sports, top tier sports. And so for those, they're trialing different content that they will have shared across other platforms. And with us having proven how effective our model is, particularly in the last month, we're now seeing more of our partners commit more resources, making more investment, because it pays for itself. If you put X amount into creating more exclusive content behind the scenes, great quality content, you'll generate greater viewership and greater earnings. And at the same time, that's not behind a subscription wall. The fan has the flexibility to earn credits and subsidize their consumption, or put their hand in their pocket and pay for it. But everybody gets the freedom of choice.
JC, Andy just mentioned it there from a fan perspective, but again, to me, from the outside looking in, it looks like a no-brainer from a fan of a club perspective that's on Recast to sign up and to watch videos, because ultimately their club will earn money for that, and fans want their clubs to do the best as they possibly can. Is it that simple?
Well, it's never that simple, because if it was, I think you'd have a lot of other people doing it. But you know, trying to get a fan to shift and look at another product and convert is always difficult. So you've got to look at what's our offering, right? What's the offer out there? Just as Andy and you were talking there about content, look, even if we took Me Too content that they're putting out on other channels, as Andy was referring to there, we believe our model, and it's proving out, can earn more per fan for that club or for that sporting institution, for that rights holder, than any other platform. Then we start to look at some exclusivity, if it's around an event or if it's around a particular content strand. Obviously, that drives take up. But there's a general myth that, and a lot of media companies have faced this over the years, that exclusivity will drive conversion, and it simply doesn't. You know, you'll see HBO do that with Friends, or Netflix do that with their content. A great data point that I always find quite low is that only 17% of Netflix subscribers subscribe for the original content. I would have thought it would have been 60 to 70%. So you're only converting 1 in 5 people for exclusive content on Netflix. So that's a bit of a myth. And so we have to look at what else is it that we're doing for the fan. And it has to be a combination of content, a combination of ease of use, a combination of the fact that although we're charging microtransactional pennies to watch a piece of content, that money is going directly into the club's wallet. And I think that is absolutely crucial. If I'm a fan, and again, for my sins at Arsenal Football Club, that we've not been doing well of late. If I knew that every pound that I spent on recast watching Arsenal content went back into Arteta's transfer budget, I wouldn't mind spending that pound. Because I know that if I was watching it on YouTube or Facebook, effectively that data is being captured and I'm still spending a pound. I'm just spending it as my attention. It's not going back to Arsenal. It's going into Facebook and YouTube's coffers. I'd much rather be on a platform like ours that goes direct back to them.
From a YouTube perspective as well, or a Google perspective or a Facebook perspective, it's pennies rather than a pound as well, isn't it? So
exactly. And so we feel as though from a fan perspective there's enough there. But what we want to do, and the reason why it's free for clubs to sign up and use literally within 2 minutes. Again, a lot of the feedback we get is, wow, this was super simple to use. And we're like, yeah, look, we don't want to make it hard for you. So you can sign up, they can get on easy, they can start putting up content and getting their fans over. And our audience approach is based around the 1-9-90 rule, which I think emanated out of Nike in the late 90s, which is you've got 1% of what I call your devout audience. The next 9% is your core audience. And the other 90% are kind of your fair weather. The 1% devout, they'll sign up to your TV channel. They'll buy the season ticket. They'll buy 2 shirts a season. They'll do anything that you put out there. The 9%, they're dedicated. They probably turn up to 2 matches a month or maybe sign up to the channel. But they're a little bit more discerning in terms of the money they spend. And then the other 90% are fairweather fans. I'd class myself as that as an Arsenal supporter. I don't buy the shirt. I rarely go to the match, but you know, I follow the news. And so what we're doing with the clubs is we're trying to convert that devout 1% over, because what that does is then cascade down into bringing on the other fans. So, you know, create a network, put out exclusive content, ensure that you message that the money is definitely going back to the club. It's a totally clean model. And that's why we're seeing the take up that we are through the fans when we sign up the rights holders.
Are kind of in the previous iteration of the podcast with Michael Bockel as well, and these new ones too, it's mainly been aimed at helping clubs lower down the pyramids and trying to make them improve everything that they possibly can to, again, earn as much money and better themselves off the pitch and on it. Is there a place on Recast for clubs lower down the pyramid as well? I know you've got some great partners lined up. We've obviously mentioned Hibs, Man City, QPR already, but what about the lower league clubs?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, like, we initially built this with a focus for those who are, who don't have the
luxury of selling their rights and not necessarily massive audiences where they can generate revenue on YouTube, etc. So, you know, a much more effective way for them to connect directly with their fans and monetize every single view. So, you know, even clubs lower down, they're producing content. I think that, you know, naturally a challenge comes for small organizations is resource and trying to produce content, which is definitely an argument for not creating your own platform, because there's then more pressure on the business to produce content to fulfill the price point for the fans that are subscribing. But as I mentioned before, we've already proven that it pays for itself. You see the return. So definitely for those organizations lower down, you know, they don't need to go out and try and, you know, put up a tender or look to build their own platform. None of that stuff. It takes them 2 minutes to set up their channel. They produce some content. And in fact, it's okay if it's raw as well. But, you know, we've seen that over 50% of younger fans, those under the age of 24, I think this was through Two Circles or something in this report, but saying that they actually would rather content of poorer quality but with immediacy. They want raw content rather than necessarily waiting until 10 p.m. for match of the day. So I think that, you know, we obviously want partners creating good quality content. I'm not discounting the importance of good quality, but, you know, don't let that be a sort of hang up and just try and get the content out there to your fans. Mm. We're also looking at our end to see what we can do to help support those who perhaps need it from a production perspective. And, you know, we'll share more about that in the coming months, I'm sure. But at least that would hopefully provide more comfort to those lower level clubs. They really have an end-to-end solution.
Yeah, I'll build on and just supplement what Andy's saying there. We set out three goals when we created the company, and the first one was to give airtime and access to sports that don't get the airtime and access they deserve. And there's so many clubs, organizations, and sports that can't sell their rights, and even if they do, they only sell them at a rate that allows them to wash their own face. They can't grow the business. And so we definitely built the platform with a purpose in mind of supporting, again, as we're talking about football, clubs in the lower leagues. And actually, by the time this podcast goes out, you'll see that we've just signed South Shields, whose president is one of the ladies from Little Mix. So there's a little bit of extra spice in that one. But our purpose is to help these clubs help themselves. And that was definitely our primary purpose. Our second was to deliver more value back to those rights holders than any other media platform. And we deliver 85 pence in the pound back. And again, you know, you could probably question across different platforms whether some are higher, etc. Patreon gives some of the subscription back, and some of that might be higher. But in general, comparison to some of the big tech guys we know, we wanted to give more back than anyone else. And the final one was we wanted to monetize all content from archive through to live, through to highlights, through to clips from view one. And the reason why we say view one is because there are other platforms out there where you have to have shown that you have an audience before they start to pay you. And we and I in particular, just I've never understood that. If I'm putting up content on a platform that I've produced and I've taken time and energy and probably capital to put in, certainly if you're a small football club, I shouldn't have to wait for 100,000 fans to be on there before I start to earn money. So there was very much a strategic purpose in setting the platform when we started, and it's certainly to try and help sports and clubs at the lower end of the leagues try and make money.
Yeah, my default, annoyingly, and yes, I'm Sports Marketing Scotland, but my default is always football because it's my big passion. But
of course, it is for most people.
It's so difficult sometimes to think about other sports, but I've had some great guests on so far from netball, speedway, ice hockey in Scotland. And Jay, when we were chatting previously from Recast, she mentioned an example from Table Tennis England, I think it was. They've had some great success on the platform so far, haven't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Not just with on-demand content, but also live. It was their under 10 and under 14s junior championships. I mean, actually, I think it was even with on-demand content, I think it was within the first couple of days, they're like, well, we've made more money already than we've ever generated before from content on any other platforms. And obviously, we can't share the figures, but their earnings were very impressed with how it performed for their live streams and what they could generate there. So once again, that helps them look at justifying more of an investment into better quality production, because I think the challenge for organizations like Table Tennis England and lower level clubs, etc., is, you know, they're like, oh, it might cost us, like, say, £1,500 to produce this piece of content or create the live stream, etc., but how are we gonna get that money back? So it's just sunk and we can't afford that. And so now, with our model having already proven that you'll make that and some, then it makes it easier for them to be able to justify an investment into that area as well.
Brilliant. And we mentioned there with the table tennis example, but streaming matches and that is something that you've made some moves into from a football perspective too. And I believe there was some initial teething problems with the QPR stream the other week in terms of the friendly that they were going to show, but tweaks have been made, and do you see that now as the way forward mainly for Recast, or is it still that variety of content, you think?
Yeah, I mean, there were challenges on that day, and you know, we accept full responsibility for that and have addressed and continue to address that, because the reality is that with what is up ahead and the conversations we're having, and partially answering your question here, like, even tier one rights holders looking to live stream on our platform into markets where they've not done a rights deal. So all of that is certainly to come, and much more of it. But it's all come much sooner than we anticipated, quite frankly. I mean, we didn't expect to move into that sort of space so quickly. But that's no excuse for what were, I won't get into the details, but basic errors on our part just a couple of weeks ago. But the good thing is, you know, I'd much rather, quite frankly, us having a technical glitch for us to address than a problem with our model. I.e., if fans were not signing up to our platform, if they were not engaging to earn credits, if our partners were not seeing much more revenue generation on our platform than they've ever seen on any other platform, those would be much more concerning for me, because technical challenges, you know, can be overcome. Naturally, they require investment, which is one of the reasons why, you know, we recently closed a Series A, and we've been fortunate to have been offered more funding recently, which we're in the process of wrapping up. So we will address those, and we are addressing those because we are certainly moving much more into the live distribution space as well.
It's, I guess, from a football fan perspective, obviously it's very disappointing when there is issues, but from a Recast perspective and from a business perspective, it is that test and learn approach, really, isn't it? It gives you so many things that you can look at and improve on for future examples when QPR, for example, look to stream again.
Yeah. It's very hard in any business setting up, and it's certainly hard when you're technically trying to build a business like we are. Sky Sports spend millions of dollars, pounds, whichever denomination we want to talk about, on their outside broadcast and making sure these things work. And when you're talking about clubs at the lower end of the leagues, when you're talking about even EFL clubs like we had with QPR in pre-season at Cambridge United, you know, we're at the cutting edge here. And when you're at the edge, things do tend to go wrong. And, you know, it, on the whole, like you say, as a football fan, it's annoying because they couldn't watch it until a little later in the first half. But actually, on the whole, the feedback has been, look, very, very interesting model, both from the rights holder and from the fans. As Andy was saying there, it was 60% of the fans were watching ads and earning to then watch the match for free, essentially using their attention as currency, and 40% actually put their hand in the pocket and paid. And we think it's going to be around 50-50 when we look at it across the board. So it is difficult. And I think going back to one of the questions we were touched on earlier is, Why don't all clubs and all sporting organisations create an OTT or direct-to-consumer service? This is exactly why. Technically, you've got to manage it. Content, you've got to manage. You've got to market it. You've got to refresh the content on a regular basis. It's not an easy thing to do, and there's always going to be bumps in the road. But, you know, as I say, and as Andy was saying there, we've put plans in place technically. We're looking at other ways that you'll probably see in the coming months about how we're going to ensure that these things are maintained and don't go down. But you know, even with some of the biggest companies in the world, you still see some issues. And so, yeah, we want to eradicate that, because there is nothing worse than in a business where a fan who sits down to watch a match between team A and team B, and if you can't get on and watch it, it's the most annoying thing in the world, even if your team are winning. And thankfully that night, QPR did win 2-1. So I think we got a little less of of opprobrium back on our side because they did win. But yes, always tough, but we're managing our way through that.
What does success then look like for Recast? Is it number of partners signed up? Is it clubs making a certain amount of money from the platform? Is it fan satisfaction from using the platform? Is it a combination of everything?
It's certainly a combination of everything. I mean, we you know, have long-term plans to be a global broadcasting platform, which is monetizing on demand, very short clips, whether it's a 5-second clip through to near live highlights and live streams itself. So for us, I mean, it's we've obviously got our own financial projections our own targets. But from a point of purpose and principle, success to us is that our rights holders, our partners, are seeing returns greater than they would elsewhere. Fans are seeing more value than they would elsewhere, and getting affordable, immediate access to, you know, to personalized content, and that brands are forming a friendly, let's say, relationship with, rather than an intrusive relationship, with fans as well in that ecosystem.
I am going to move slightly on a bit to a bit more of a Scottish sport and probably a Scottish football angle, because I've already mentioned it is basically my default a lot of the time. I feel like this will be a really interesting question from both of your perspectives, given who you both support. But if you were given the keys to Scottish football tomorrow, Andy, we'll start with you, what would you do to change things off the pitch?
Well, I think understandably, you've first got to focus on doing your traditional deals with traditional broadcasters to look at the, you know, the money that can be brought in up front, but also looking at how to maximize on the opportunity elsewhere, whether it's in different markets or with different audiences. Because let's be honest, certain people are just not going to subscribe to Sky Sports or BT Sport or to Hibs TV. So, but on that point there, I mean, I going into what was it last season? There was a game. It was Hibs Livingston, and it was the first game that I went to tune in for. And it was at Livingston, and I was like, oh, I actually need to sign up to Livingston's website. And I mean, that's extremely fragmented. It's a bit odd for me to be signing up to another club's TV channel, etc., to pay for that game. So I think that considering the costs that are involved for those clubs individually, the way that that model is quite sort of traditional, they don't leverage the reach and the influence of the players and the fans. Obviously, there's a bias answer coming this way, but you know, I would certainly look at continuing to do the traditional deals that are most lucrative in the short term, whilst testing out a model that comes at essentially zero risk on the cost side, leveraging the offering that something like Recast has to go into other markets with live streams, and also looking to monetize near live clips and highlights rather than putting them on social. And as we see that develop and prove itself out, then you've got something to think about with the next time that a broadcaster comes to the table and perhaps makes you an offer that wasn't something that you you found too attractive in the first place, but had to take nevertheless.
Yeah, we'll get all the clubs onto Recast. I think that's what you're trying to say there.
And then I'll try and be quick. I'd do three things. I would say, whether it's Scottish football or even the Premier League, let's just do the Premier League if it was regarding Arsenal. I would say, first one, don't change anything you're doing. You're highly successful, the most successful sports rights in the world when it comes to the Premier League. $1.5 billion a season, the same as the NFL. NFL's over 10 years. Premier League's over three in the deals that are done. So keep doing that, no problem. Second one would be, what are you doing with your highlights? Because you're not monetizing the highlights in the right way. Sky put them straight on the app after the live match, and they don't make any money, and chiefly subscribers can only see them, but on the app, some people that are not subscribers can see them, but it's chiefly subscribers. And then they put them on YouTube where they're earning, but not earning as much as they would potentially earn on Recast. And then the third thing I would say is I would describe to them that all businesses fall into two buckets, value creators and value capture. And the Premier League is a value creator. They create the league, clubs come on, there's amazing matches, it's world renowned and everyone wants to be in the Premier League. But the value capture part of their strategy is slightly off. And the reason why it's off is because when any fan takes a video within the stadium, or when Aubameyang scores a goal and puts it up on his social media feed pre the official line of going out, which used to be up to 18 hours and is now down to 6 hours. The Premier League have always tried to curtail that. And with Recast, you don't have to curtail. You can capture that value, as Andy was saying at the very top of the conversation, through smart contracts when you place something on. So if I'm a fan, or let me just say if I'm a Aubameyang, because that makes it easier. Aubameyang places a video on his Instagram feed.
Or even starting at the top, Premier League put the video on, yep. Arsenal and Aubameyang share that to their followers. They've got the reach, the audience comes in, and revenue shared with Aubameyang, Arsenal, Premier League on content that's currently not being monetized, and they're spending a fortune trying to rip it down from social media platforms. Exactly. So rather than trying to, as JC's saying, sort of close that door and stop it, which is, quite frankly, you're chasing your tail when you're spending money, rather flip your view of it and look at the incentivized sharing model and make money and let those people access the content legally whilst generating value.
Exactly. Because the difference being is that the majority of the value that you get from something like the Premier League comes from watching the match at 4 o'clock on a Sunday. But the virtue of going online and seeing some of the goals separately, sure, you know, millennials and Gen Z, you know, looking at the data points, Gen Z will never subscribe to Sky, probably, or very few of them ever will. And 50% of them have never watched a football match in its entirety. That you're not losing out there, right? That's a much longer term. It's a much more structural trend than it is secular, but you know, that's something you've got to figure out that's different. What you can do in the meantime is capture the value from all those people that have got put that out, players, etc. And I think that is the fundamental difference to what we're doing that takes a while for someone like the Premier League to really understand. And look, we're not going to be able to do it ourselves. This is something that will happen over time. We just hope to be there to be the platform that is proving out this value capture model as something of value rather than something that they are quite actually every day regard as piracy. So they're the three things I would do.
No, I think they're brilliant. And you were obviously talking from a Premier League example there, but if we take Scottish football as that example, we're even a little bit further behind the curve there. I think our rules for sharing content is even further back than the Premier League. So, yeah, it's not great in this day and age. So, fingers crossed that improves at some point in the near future. Conscious of time, guys, I'm sure you want to get on with your evenings.
We're happy to overrun a little bit. We're all right.
Cool. Magic. So finish us up a little bit with a final three questions. So who do either of you currently look at or follow for any inspiration at all? And that can be across sport. It could be in general business as well.
As the traditionally more.
I'm looking at JC right now with a confused face. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out what my answer is.
I've got a lot of I'm a traditionally creative person with a capital C. As you know, I come from a creative background, and you know, my creativity, there is no algorithm for it. I get inspired by many different things. And so, you know, I really read autobiographies. That's I prefer to try and understand the motivation of people, entrepreneurs, sports people, I think in general are somewhat crazy. Otherwise, they wouldn't get up every day at 5 o'clock and, you know, come back at 5 p.m. and then go again exactly the next day. Trying to understand the inspiration that drives those people and motivation that drives those people for me across from something from art through to sport through to business. So nothing that's specific, because I hate giving specifics on interviews and podcasts, but just in general, mine is much more diverse, and it tends to bear fruit that if I reach out to as many different touch points and diverse touch points as possible, my ideas tend to be deeper, richer, and more colourful. So that's what I look for.
Love that.
Wow.
Andy, what about you?
I JC inspired.
Have you got an answer yet?
Quite clearly, I get my inspiration from JC.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
No, I mean, it's a similar answer in the sense that it's not necessarily people that inspire me, but more sort of moments and capturing those moments. I've actually got some in mind, but I'm not going to bother naming anything specific. But no, I think you know, JC's right. If you look at how an individual performs, whether if they face challenges from a business perspective, or if they're an athlete who has suffered, let's say, even an injury and then worked their way back over 18 months to get back out in the field, like, those are quite inspiring moments for me. Because in business as well, you face a lot of setbacks and challenges. I experienced many of them throughout Sport Lobster, but you got to, you know, dust yourself off and get back up, smile and crack on with persistence, tenacity, and you know, with your learnings to take forward. So that's where, for me, it's more about certain moments and reading stories of different individuals that give me my moments of inspiration, I would say.
I love that. Yeah, definitely. It's a really interesting angle to take from it as well. I really do appreciate those answers, definitely. We touched on it earlier on too, but obviously resource is a big thing for those working in sport, and especially so in Scottish football and Scottish sport. What's one kind of product, tool, or feature that you think would make the lives of those working in the industry a little bit easier? What would you recommend?
Recast, yeah, would certainly go a long way to doing that. Look, obviously, you know, being in the business that we're in, it's interesting hearing about different products, whether it's to do with player performance or the way in which, you know, let's say, recovering from injury, or you know, data analytics, etc. There's all sorts of things that you see, but naturally, with our focus being what it is, I think that there's two things. I think that looking at cloud-based production businesses and offerings, and I won't name any, but there's a few out there. You know, they will add tremendous value to businesses and those working in sport. And then also, yeah, I mean, you know, once again, a biased answer, but, you know, our offering certainly is. I think that, you know, the challenge for many within these organizations is looking for budget to justify that budget, etc. Like, we literally are making lives easier, not only because we're reducing the cost, but adding value to the bottom line. So I won't say just us. If I were to talk about another product, then I would say what complements us is a cloud-based production offering, I would say.
Yeah, I'll go for something a bit broader. Like, if sport, my opinion on sport is that it's been very slow to innovate over the years. When you try and think of a huge innovation or a big innovation that has made a quantum leap forward, it's very hard to think about that. And the reason why is because sport tends to, what I say to the team is, it has a monopoly on our passion. Get it round the right way, JC. It has a monopoly on our passion. And when you've got a monopoly on someone's passion, you don't necessarily need to iteratively improve every day. And so there are three areas of sport that I think need improvement. One, as Andy's touched on, is performance. I think the data and analytics that the teams can get back from wearables and hearables and insiderables, however you're capturing someone's performance, is crucial. And a lot of the teams, even down in the lower leagues now, have heart monitors or try and understand when an injury is going to kick in. So that's one area. The second area is how you distribute that content, which is where Recast sits, right? We're sitting in that area of how we take the performance of those players and those sports, and we translate that to a fan. And, you know, one of the biggest changes, again, we talk about football, was when Sky came in 92 and spent 300 and something million on the Premier League. And you saw it going from what was a quite hokey production on ITV to being the slam dunk of amazing spectacle that we see today, or at least it started off like that. You know, investment in graphics, investment in profiles, etc. And then the final area is fan experience. How do the fans essentially get closer to the action? And some of that comes through media, some of that comes through fans, players getting closer to fans, and one-on-one interviews. We're recently doing something with Aubameyang, actually, and a company called Galaxy Racer, where he's playing fans in an esports game. All of that becoming more accessible to deliver a greater fan experience is crucial. So I think there are a number of improvements, not just one, that are required. But one of the things I do see is that with millennials and Gen Zs turning off from traditional sports and focusing much more on esports and other things, these clubs, these organizations are realizing that not necessarily in the short term, not in the next 24 months, but over the next 5 to 10 years, unless they do start to improve the overall experience from player to distribution to fan, these clubs and these leagues are going to be in trouble. And so that's why they're looking to improve. So I think those three areas.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here nodding, basically nodding along with you. Obviously, we're not on video or anything like that, but yeah, definitely just sitting here nodding.
Good.
Final question for me, and I feel like after the last couple of answers, I might not get a specific one here, but this is my lazy question of the podcast. I've been asking everybody who they think I should be speaking to on a future episode of the podcast. Do you have any specifics at all, or would you like to go general?
Maybe based on what we've discussed today, you should ask Neil Doncaster. I mean, if that was a suggestion, no. I think that probably, you know, the someone that's running, and we've spoken about different sports obviously today, but you know, I think that considering what we've discussed today, probably pretty interesting to have a conversation with, you know, the chief exec. It could be like, for example, Sarah Sutcliffe, the chief exec of Table Tennis England, to do a deeper dive on some of the challenges they face as a national governing body. And, you know, that can span across performance, data analytics, the use of that, but also distribution and monetization. So that might be a quite a nice follow-up to what we discussed today.
Yeah, and I think I've got, there's two. I would say, only just because the Olympics have just finished, but someone like Adam Peaty, as one of our biggest and greatest Olympians who has been extremely successful, like, how does he see him motivate himself every day, right? I think that's, it's important to try and understand that from the athlete side of it. And what motivates him and how he can continue to make money. And then the second would be the new chief exec of the Premier League, because and forgive me because I can't remember his name, but it's the that guy. I think he's got the hardest job at the moment to establish and work out how he continues to maintain the Premier League at the very pinnacle of sports rights. And one of the things that we don't do, actually, which we haven't mentioned at all on this podcast, has been that we don't buy sports rights. We don't believe that's the way forward for a number of reasons. But I think that he'd be interesting, because I'd be very interested to hear what he would have to say about the ideas, philosophies and concepts that they're going to put in place to maintain themselves at that very top of the pyramid.
Yeah, definitely. You mentioned that he's got the hardest job. I think Neil Doncaster has the hardest job. So maybe try and get both of them on. But
that would be good, actually. Yeah, you could have both of them on, working out the way forward, because there's definitely some sharing of best interest and best practice there.
We will see if that happens. Gents, thank you so much for coming on. I will let you go, but I thoroughly enjoyed that. I will do a little outro myself, and I'll put all the details on Recast in there, just if anybody does want to, or if they are listening and they do want to get in touch with you to sign up. I'll stick all the details on that. And thank you again.
Thanks for having us. Really enjoyed that. Cheers.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Chris.
Huge thanks to both Andy and JC for taking time out of their busy schedules to chat to me today. I'm sure you'll agree there's plenty to take away there, and Recast sounds hugely intriguing. If you're a club or rights holder listening, it's definitely worth a conversation with the team at Recast about what you could gain from signing up to the platform. If you head to recast.app/get-started, you can sign up in seconds, like the guy said. If you're a fan, head to recast.app to sign up and start watching.
you enjoyed today's podcast, please do consider sharing it across your social channels. More people finding and listening will hopefully help more clubs and individuals improve their marketing efforts. See you next time.